Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as, well, an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. You're going to be treated to one of the most extraordinary intelligence briefings you can imagine. It is provided by a man of uncommon intelligence and great astuteness when it comes to understanding history and international affairs and the developments that will shape in the future as they have in the past, the course of freedom and that of the free world. He is Mark Helprin, a distinguished author of best-selling books now for decades, a senior fellow with the highly regarded Claremont Institute for the Study of Statesmanship and Political Philosophy. He has been prize-winning in various capacities. He has also served in such extraordinary capacities as a seaman in the British Merchant Navy and the Israeli Defense Forces, both the infantry and the Air Force. And he is a man of letters in the various periodical literature as well, and I've been extremely admiring, in particular over the years, of his work at places like the Wall Street Journal and the Claremont Review of Books. He's a dear friend, a valued colleague, and a wonderful guest, and he's graciously given us a full hour of his time to talk about the state of the world. It is wonderful to have you with us. Mark Helprin, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Oh, thank you so much, Frank.
Let's start with kind of an overview, Mark, as to the state of what I call the war for the free world. What is going on at the sort of macro level that we should be thinking about before we turn to some of its particulars?
Well, this is something that you never really read about in the news, that what the French call responsible government, meaning the administration and even the Congress, don't think this way. They don't think in what Shakespeare would call the gross and scope of things. It's all day-to-day reactive type of or ideologically motivated politics that's atomized and small. But if you look at it as a whole, if you look at the world as a whole, what I see is a distressing similarity to the international system that existed before the First World War. And that is this. When you have a group of powers that are roughly equal, and they are entangled by very complicated alliances, then you have the potential for, let's put it simply, war. Needed is a system of alliances, and there will always be a system of alliances in which there is a very strong, powerful leader that can discipline its allies. Particularly in the First World War, what it came down to was that Germany was unwilling or unable to discipline Austria's ultimatum to the Serbs. And that drew in Russia, which was protecting the Serbs, and it's Russia's ally, and it drew in Britain, which was France's ally, at least in the sense of an entente rather than a formal treaty. This is the key to it, because in the world today, we have three power centers. We have Russia, which is up and coming. It's a revanchist power. What does revanche mean? In French, it means revenge. Russia wants revenge because it just was humiliated and it fell, and it's always been this. And it now was pushed back, and as Putin himself says, it's like a spring. You push back a spring, it wants to come back out. And then we have China, which is a revanchist power too, because it has always been very angry about being humiliated for centuries by the European powers and by Japan. And you have these two forces, these two springs that want to push out. And then you have the third center of power, which is the United States, which at present is more powerful than either of the other two, but if you take into account geography, it is not, because we have a vast distance to go, and that essentially denatures our power. So here's the key to it. The key to it is that in the United States, since the end of the Cold War, we have deliberately, in the first case, Bill Clinton throwing an 8-year party. Second case, George Bush fighting a war in the Middle East without paying attention to the basic staples of power. And in the third case, Obama logically predisposed against American power, certainly letting the American power erode and really screwing the military. So right now, we have, by my estimation, and unfortunately, I think about this every day, and that is that the relative power of the United States militarily in regard to now the two other power centers, Russia and China, is approximately one-third of what it was at the end of the Cold War. In an absolute sense, it's a little more, but because of the effects of geography and because we would have to go vast distances in order to apply that power, the effective power is about a third of what it was. So we have, as a result, three power centers, Russia, China, and the United States. And that's very dangerous because we're all intertwined with allies, and much like the situation in the First World War, where you did not have a superpower which could discipline its allies. Now, and also the other powers from even embarking on a defensive war against it. But here's my point. In the United States, since the end of the Cold War, we have had a diminution of our military capacity. First, it was Bill Clinton who threw an 8-year party. Then it was George Bush who fought in the Middle East without paying attention to the basic staple military fundamentals that make us a great power. In other words, he neglected the basics in order to pursue the war in the Middle East. And then with Obama, who was ideologically predisposed to any kind of American real power, we've had three 8-year administrations which have eroded our power. As a result, there are three power centers in the world deeply entwined with their own set of alliances and opponents. And then you have the areas which I call the tinderboxes. There's the tinderbox in the Middle East. There's the tinderbox in the Baltic. Russia will, I believe, want to reclaim the Baltic republics. And there's the tinderbox in North Korea, and there's the tinderbox of the South China Sea. So when you have this set of four tinderboxes, and you have three roughly equal powers, or at least they're becoming roughly equal, then you have a very dangerous situation that existed before World War I.
Let me just ask you, Mark Halperin, things are of course made more complicated by virtue of the apparent modus vivendi, at the very least, if not an actual alliance between two of those three power centers. The Russians and the Chinese seem pretty much aligned, at least with respect to resisting us. We'll talk about each of the various component parts of this tripartite strategic situation, but just talk for a moment, if you would, about the relationship between the Chinese and the Russians and how that bears on your larger point.
That's an excellent point, Frank, and it's also similar to what happened in World War I, because you have lots of relationships of that nature. Now, specifically Russia and China, Russia has been selling China arms, very advanced arms, to essentially pick apart and reverse engineer. China is unlike Japan. See, Japan is the Japanese are extremely careful and they have immense probity and they work hard. China is not quite so careful, but they have immense probity. They work hard. They push and they are creative. They're much more creative than the Japanese. They're much more flexible. So China has been getting these armaments from Russia, ships, planes, electronics, etc. And there's an advantage for both China and Russia, and that is that because neither is currently as powerful as the United States, when they act in coordination, they frustrate the interests of the United States, such as in Iran. They are essentially pushing helping the Iranians, A, to defend their nuclear installations. The Russians have always threatened to give them the advanced air-to-air missiles. They have yet to do it. They keep on announcing that they'll do it. I think they don't do it because the minute that they do it, then that would give Israel tremendous impetus to make its own attack against Iran.
Mark, we have to pause for just a moment. I want you to come back to that point when we get on the other side of this short break. We're speaking with Mark Halperin for this entire hour, the author most recently of In Sunlight and In Shadow, on matters involving high strategy and geopolitics. More with Mark Halperin right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.